Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35,000ths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times, is anybody safe? Is anybody? People keep talking about how society is falling down today. And as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be safe? Well,
other day. Would the air I breathe be better if I'm not around you? Would the man be spared that spoke the truth? Cause he never did abuse it. As long as I want to be saved, how can I be free in my mind as long as I'm a slave? Is anybody here gonna be saved? Is anybody gonna be saved? Oh, say it again.
Once again, Wealth Perceptions and Nomad Literacy. Live stream number 619-768-2945. That's 619-768-2945. Now, what I want, and we have a special guest today, Crystal Vanner, who will be on momentarily. But here's what I want you to do first. Take out put something to write with, something to write on. And I'm going to give you this again before we do a quick break and bring her on. But on a piece of paper or on your phone or however you do it, I want you to write these are categories. Let's see, it's one, two, yeah, three. Actually, four. At the top of the paper, write... category one will be sedentary. These are lifestyles. The broad term, the term we're using are lifestyles, and then we're going to do lifestyle distinctions. The first distinction will be sedentary lifestyles. Sedentary lifestyles, I might be pronouncing that wrong. Sedentary lifestyles, that's lifestyle number one. Lifestyle number two, nomadic lifestyle. Nomadic lifestyle, number two. Number three, will be, recreational lifestyle. The fourth category, and I need to keep notes myself so I'll keep track of this talk. The fourth, it's not a lifestyle, but technology. The term that I want you to write down will be appropriate technology. Now, while I'm giving you guys that, let's see, I need to put it on my phone so I won't forget, because I have a tendency to ramble. All right, lifestyle, and the bumping that you're in the back is, I'm on my phone. So I'm doing what I'm telling you to do. All right, lifestyle distinctions. All right, number one will be sedentary. Sedentary lifestyle. The number two, these are the basic fundamental lifestyles of mankind. All right, since day one and up until now. All right. Sedentary, next one would be nomadic lifestyle. Third type of lifestyle that man lives is recreational. All right. Now, the fourth category, which is not a lifestyle, but it's termed, appropriate technology. Okay, appropriate technology. All right, let me say that to my phone, to the star by. Okay, now, if you didn't get a chance to write that down, once again, go get something to write on, a pen, pencil, piece of paper, scratch sheet of paper. I just did it on my phone so I can remember what I'm talking about. Crystal Vanner, she's our special guest today. She's going to be on momentarily, so we'll be back in 3 minutes with this Wealth Perceptions and Nomad Literacy with Crystal Vanner. Church and steeple. Okay, we're back with It's My House. Today's podcast is titled Wealth Perceptions and Nomad Literacy. 619-768-2945. And we have a guest today, Crystal Van, before I move on momentarily. Before the break, I asked you to get something right with or right on. And then right at the top of the paper or phone, whatever, the term lifestyle distinctions. Now, this is a global podcast because people listen to us in many of the countries around the world. So here are the basic lifestyles known to man. Most people live one of the three. First one is sedentary lifestyle. Second one is a nomadic lifestyle. And third is a recreational lifestyle. Now, the fourth term that I asked you to write down, which is not a lifestyle distinction, but it's appropriate technology. The term appropriate technology, and to be more specific, appropriate housing technology. Now, today in the United States is, Veterans Day. So it's a bank holiday. Courts are closed. But tomorrow morning, there will be people in bankruptcy court, rent court, landlord, tenant court, whatever you want to call it, housing court or code enforcement court, because they're not living, either they're not living or somebody thinks they're not living a financially sustainable lifestyle. And in most cases, well, matter of fact, in the Western world, this is something that I think should be taught in school, lifestyle distinctions, but it's not. Let me break down the four terms I put out there before we go to Crystal Van. Sedentary lifestyle is basically you find a place to live. It could be a room. It could be a house. It could be a mansion. Typically, people might find a house to live in if they're going to buy it and put a down payment, closing costs, and they're there for a number of years. It could be 10, 20, 30 years. A lot of people get these 30-year mortgages. Sedentary, it's basically stationary. A lot of people call this stable. I don't know about it. Anyway, stable. All right, so that's the sedentary. All right, the next type of lifestyle, and that's the lifestyle. You know, typically, as you find this house or mansion or whatever it's going to be, but, you know, you got a fixed address, and you're living there, and you're going there. You have a routine. You have a life that you might have a start of family, and it's the same old shit for, I don't know, however long you live or move, all right? Sedentary lifestyle. Next, but with that lifestyle typically comes a lot of debt. You know, if you have to borrow money for a mortgage and all this other stuff, and then you get the roof needs repair, you know, maintenance, all that comes with expenses and a lot of debt. Comes with a sedentary lifestyle. Most of the people that are going to bankruptcy court tomorrow morning, rent court tomorrow morning, locked up right now for child support, most of these people are living a sedentary lifestyle. The next type of, which, as you'll see quickly here, you're living the wrong type of lifestyle. You have no business with champagne taste on a beer budget. That's one way to put it. But you know what? Nobody is judging you because you're not going through what we're about to go through on this podcast today. So the sedentary lifestyle is not working for you. The problem is you don't even know that you don't even know that you're living a sedentary lifestyle, and you got other options. All right, the next type of lifestyle is a nomadic lifestyle. You know, Mongols, you know, during the Genghis Khan era, and even to this day, nomads, Native American Indians, a lot of tribes in Africa, but no, or digital nomads, people that are living in by choice now, in their cars, vans, teepees, hikers. You have digital nomads that they live with, hey, their smartphone, their tablet, their laptop. They might not even have that, but they know where to go to an internet cafe. You have digital nomads, which are virtually, many of them, not all of them, but many of them, are debt-free. They're not waiting to retire off of a 9-to-5 job 20 years, 30 years, 40 years from now. Because the only asset that is really doled out equally, as long as we're breathing, is time. That's the common denominator with everybody who's breathing, whoever has breathed and whoever will breathe. All right. A nomadic lifestyle, if you've been educated on how to live a nomadic lifestyle, because, see, all those people I talked about that are going to bankruptcy court, that old child support, that are going to landlord tenant court and all these other courts, typically money, because if your money's tied up, your time's tied up, is because you've been living the wrong type of lifestyle. The nomadic lifestyle might be more your taste. The third type of distinction, and we'll have Crystal Vander in a moment to break that down. And then the third type of lifestyle would be recreational. Now, recreational and nomadic, they blur lines, in my opinion. You know, these are people that might have an RV, or they could have a car, van, whatever, or a bike, or they just hike. They might be doing Appalachian Trail. But, you know, it's for recreation or for fitness or a combination of the two. I mean, some people, matter of fact, the nomadic lifestyle and the recreational lifestyle, those two lifestyles overlap. Some of these people might even have a sedentary brick-and-mortar house somewhere that they leave it empty or let somebody house sit in it or do a house swap exchange or they rent it out or what have you. Now, the last term that we're talking about that we're going to mention here before we go to Crystal Vander is appropriate technology. Now, specifically in the scope of this podcast today, appropriate housing technology. Many people that are going to rent court, whatever you're living in, a rent, a studio, a mansion, and you're in court because the landlord says you owe so much amount of money, or you're in bankruptcy court trying to figure out how to save your house with a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, or whatever, more than likely, you're in the wrong type of housing technology. A lot of the people that are listening to this podcast that might be going to court tomorrow or this week because of some housing-related issue. You might be in a house, this house has got a leak, and you got an estimate from roofers that it's going to cost $10,000 for a new roof, and you don't have 10,000 cents, let alone $10,000. That's a big red flag. You're in the wrong type of housing appropriate technology. A house, and let me put this distinction out here. There's a distinction between a house and a home. A home is an intangible emotional concept. A house, technologically speaking, could be brick and mortar. It could be a car. It could be the bat cave. It could be a bird's nest. But a house is some type of dwelling that you're comfortable with. All right. So if you're in a situation where you got a $10,000 repair and you don't have 10,000 cents to repair it, more than likely, that's a good indicator you're not in the right type of appropriate technology for your personal housing. You need to switch up and maybe live in the Batcave or live in the car, or live in the van, live in a tiny house, you know, get a cargo container and convert it into a living space. There are multiple options available that'll put you in the right appropriate technology. But here is the glitch, the flying ointment. In our Western world, our perceptions of wealth, generally speaking, are very, very warped. Many of us look at the American dream, and American dream, well, it was a house, a chicken in every pot. I think that's basically it. That's the American dream. Some people in the United States, particularly some African Americans, not all, but if you look at like some of the rap videos, which is not representative of black folks in the United States, I'm just saying. But African Americans at least have embraced the idea of the American dream more than white folks have. Because we have, well, not all of us now, because not all blacks are alike. I'm just using this for illustration purposes. We have to have a bigger car. We have to have a bigger everything. And typically a lot of that stuff comes with debts attached. So what I'm saying is you need to probably change your wealth perspective, because I'm going to throw this out, and you've heard it before, but I want you to think about it, particularly as you listen to Crystal Vanner. Less is really more. For me, when I cut out cable television, something as simple as cable, because I had an addiction to cable at one time. Once I cut out the cable TV and took that money and bought a ticket to Barbados, my life has never been the same. But in any event, let's go to Crystal Vanner. Good morning, Crystal.
Hey, how are you?
Better than terrific. Thank you for waking up, because I think you were awake a couple of times along the way.
Yeah, I'm two hours behind you.
Okay, well, thank you for getting up for us. First thing, now, you share with us a little bit about yourself and then how you got into the – I'm putting you – matter of fact, that on the title of this podcast, they have Nomad Literacy. And the reason why I put that is a lot of people in my – it's my house opinion – who are going to court tomorrow due to some housing issue, they're basically nomad illiterate or recreational living illiterate. And they need to become literate about different type of lifestyles, these, you know, the fundamentals I put out there. So you're living what I would call a hybrid between a nomad and a recreational lifestyle. So share with us your background and how you got into what you do now, how you live now.
Well, my background is all over the place. I am 47, so I'm not a retirement age, but I have one child that was a single mom for most of his life, and I've worked. My main career was a cosmetologist, a hairdresser, but I went into the public school system when my son became school age, and pretty much worked in the public school system for most of his school career while he was in school. And I kind of found this lifestyle, the one I'm living currently, by accident. I was looking into something else. One of those lifestyles we were talking about as far as a tiny home type of a lifestyle, living, you know, more within your means, because I was one of those people who was a renter and, you know, like you said, something happens and you've got to, you know, the landlord decides to sell the place or raise the rent, you know, you've got to move on to something else. You know, I was one of those people without the 10,000 pennies, let alone the $10,000.
Okay. Well, all right, so you were living a sedentary lifestyle, and you started to do some research.
Right. I started to research living somewhere where I wouldn't have to move as much. Because I was kind of nomadic in a way, raising my son. We moved quite a few times from rental to rental to rental, almost for a little while, almost annually we moved every time our lease was up for probably about 4 years. We moved every single year. So I started looking into tiny houses. I started watching this show on HGTV called You Live in What? And I was fascinated with these people living alternative places, people living in old churches that they gutted and refurbished, and people living in gas stations and silos and all different weird buildings that were already available that they just decided to buy and either put on land or if it was something stationary like a church, just gut it out and make it their own, firehouses, whatever they could, you know, buy fairly cheaply. They were all run down and they were fixing them up, and that just really appealed to me. And so while watching that, I started watching tiny home shows as well, and that really appealed to me because it was on wheels. And I don't know why, because I've never been a traveler, but that really struck a chord with me. Being able to move my dwelling was a huge thing, because I'm like, I had never thought about that, moving your dwelling and living where you want to live. So once I went down the tiny home rabbit hole on YouTube, and pretty much at the time, this was like 2014 and early 2015, YouTube started recommending van dwelling videos. I had no idea what that meant, what that was about, and I kind of started watching everything I could get my eyes on YouTube. And that was when the light bulb went off.
Good. Well,
I decided. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. You decided what?
I decided that was more my speed. Living in a vehicle was more my speed, because with the tiny homes, you can move them, but they're not meant to move as much as I was thinking I wanted to move. Like, you couldn't move it, you know, every couple of months. You could, but ultimately, you know, we got to figure out where you're going to park it every single time. I felt that a vehicle is easier to park, smaller and easier for me to maintain and move myself. And at the time, my second marriage was ending. So I kind of decided, well, this is perfect for me. It's just me. And I love living in small spaces. Every time I, moved, I would always move to a smaller apartment. I pretty much lived in my bedroom anyway. So it was perfect for me.
Okay, now you mentioned something, you like living in a small place, and I want to emphasize that.
Yeah.
No matter what kind of income we have, be it the Queen of England with a $18 billion a year income, I'm 6'8".
Uh-huh.
No matter who's listening to this podcast, we can only occupy so much space at any given time.
True.
We all live small. We all live small. So with a wealth perception, like, I'm going to give you an example. Out in California right now, I believe one of the towns that I believe, if it hasn't been completely wiped off the face of the earth, Malibu, a lot of Malibu is no longer Malibu. So you got these people in these multi-million-dollar houses, these very expensive houses,
mm-hmm.
with all, and many of them, with these, million-dollar mortgages on their house, yet
right.
they take up the same amount of space as me and you. So wealth
right.
perception, do you really need to live in a million-dollar house? I mean, you know, do you even need to live in a $50,000 house?
Right.
Now, some of these ideas, people, that you're going to hear on here, are going to seem extreme to you. But you're going to have to do something. Well, you don't have to do anything. But anyway, getting back to you, Crystal. So you decided the appropriate technology for you would be a van. So now, what
right.
was your process of going that way?
Okay, so yeah, I definitely decided that a vehicle would be the way for me to go. At the time I started figuring out what I could live in, because all the videos I were watching were mostly cargo vans, and I didn't have the funds to buy another vehicle at the time. So I just started looking at the SUV I already had, and I had a 2000 GMC Jimny. So I just started looking at it. I took some measurements in the back behind the two front seats. I took the back seat out completely to see if that gave me more room. It did. So that's when I started figuring out how big of a bed I would need, how much space do you need for your, you know, personal belongings, and how many personal belongings do you actually need. I've never been a woman who's had a lot of clothes or shoes. I think really we were talking the other day, the people I'm camped with, the two ladies I'm camped with, I think I told them I've never had more than five pairs of shoes at one time. I just am not a big shoe or clothes person, and I'm constantly going through my belongings at least every other month or so and seeing what I haven't worn or touched or used and try and get rid of it. But once I figured out, okay, I could do this in the SUV I have and then save some money and upgrade to something else later, then that's kind of where my thought process started with the whole thing, just using what I already had to the best of my ability. Even for my build out, I used everything I already had in my rental that I was renting with my second husband. I used what I could from there, and whatever I felt like I needed to make it better, I found at thrift shops and stuff like that, or yard sales, secondhand.
Okay. Now, when you started this journey, were you working a 9-to-5 or what?
I was. I was actually out on an injury from my job in the school system. I got injured, so I was. It was the summer when I started. I started August of 2015, and yeah, so it was summertime, and school hadn't started back up. So I had just, you know, enough time to get it together before the end of August. The very last week of August was when I needed it to be done because school was going to be starting, and I knew that time would be, you know, more constrained with working and trying to build out something to live in. So I wanted to get it all done before school started. So yeah, so I started actually building out probably in July when I finally made the decision, but August 27th of 2015 was my last day in Sticks and Bricks. So yeah.
You were living in a large metro area when you started.
Yeah, I was living in Northern Virginia. Yeah, I was living in Northern Virginia at the time. Yeah.
And that's an expensive area.
It really is.
And now, you mentioned you're a cosmetologist. You work in the school system.
Right.
How would you commit a person that, let's say a person that's going to court this week, they're facing eviction or they've already gone through it, so this week the sheriff's going to show up. What would
right.
you recommend that these people do? Because you found a solution.
Right. Well, for me, the way I figured out I needed, I took four Rubbermaid tubs, you know, the tubs you store stuff in. And I designated one for clothing and shoes and toiletries, one for food, one for like car essentials or tools. And then a fourth one was like miscellaneous things that didn't necessarily have a category, but you kind of wanted to have on hand, like, you know, some office supplies, writing material, books, whatever electronics I might need, like my tablet, my cell phone, and, you know, those kinds of things, safety things. Like, I don't carry a handgun, but, you know, I have a knife, I have a taser, you know, that kind of thing. So I just had those designated bins, and you figure out, you know, what you need. When I first started, I did get a very small storage unit, which is where I put my back seat to my SUV. And it was called a locker. It wasn't even called a storage unit because it was half the size of the smallest one. They had one on top of the other. So what they did is they took their smallest storage units and divided them in half and put some like a floor in there. So each person, you had a top one and a bottom one. So it was a very, very small unit. So I was able to put a couple of Rubbermaid bins in there and my backseat to my SUV. So that's what I did. I just took my Rubbermaid bins and divided up the categories and said, this is how much these items can take. Is this how much space they can take with the size of this Rubbermaid bin? So whatever clothing I have has to fit in this Rubbermaid bin. Now I put another Rubbermaid bin of off-season clothing in the storage because I knew obviously winter's coming back. So I just kept summer and spring, summer and fall clothes in the Rubbermaid bin in the vehicle. And then my winter stuff I kept, like a big winter coat, some extra blankets, all that was kept in the storage unit at the time. So I think if you are either facing eviction or you've already got the eviction notice and you know there's nothing you can do, start going through your stuff as quick as you can. Do a quick sort without emotional attachment and decide what you absolutely positively need to live. Clothing, most of us have our same things that we like to wear over and over again, and you're going to wash once a week, so really you don't need a ton of clothes. And if you work somewhere, you can get away with wearing black pants with a different top. So, you know, get yourself three really good pair of black pants, which can easily be found at thrift shops. You know, I always love thrift shopping in the rich neighborhoods because that's where people donate, in their neighborhood. So you're going to get the label brand name things for, you know, a fraction of the cost. Get yourself a pair of three or four pair of black pants and some nice tops, and you can just rotate those out. You wash clothes once a week. Boom, there it is. That's all you need. So I think people overthink how much they need. People tend to think they need things when they really don't. Those are mostly all wants. We can live with very, very little. We just choose not to because, you know, we just want what we want sometimes.
Well, that's why I brought you on today, because that's why I titled this part of this podcast, Nomad Literacy, because many people, what you're talking about, they haven't been taught that. Because, you know,
that's true.
Yeah, a bunch of people that are getting evicted or foreclosed on. And matter of fact, there's a movie on, it's not on Netflix, it's on Amazon and YouTube movies called 99 Homes. And in one of the scenes, you know, the sheriff shows up, but before the sheriff got there, this man had turned the gun. He killed his kids, killed his wife, and turned the gun on himself because they were getting evicted that day. But they didn't know
wow.
Crystal Banner or the nomad lifestyle. They weren't. They were totally, like I said, a lot of people don't know that they don't even know. Because I believe you can give some real, I mean, you give real solid information that's practical that you can walk into the, actually, the people in social services office knew this. It wouldn't be a social services office. But that's just mine. Where are some of the places that you've been able to travel to?
I hit the road in, I did 2 years in my van working. So I hit the road in 2017. So it's been just a little over a year. So I've pretty much, I think I have now 14 states left until I have all the lower 48 states. So I've pretty much been the whole East Coast and most of all of the South. I just tried to travel through the Midwest this year in October, but it got too cold, so I pretty much came back to Arizona. So I'm officially an Arizona resident. I just got my tags about a week ago for my vehicle. I got my car registered. So I have a license and tags in Arizona. So I'm an Arizona resident now. But I've just been able to travel all over the place. And it's really the cost of gas and car repairs is what it, you know, costs me to be able to travel. And I can travel as much or as little as I want. Right now I'm hunkered down because I need some van repairs, and so I'm kind of hunkered down, and I'm making money and saving money and to get the van repairs done. So I'm kind of hunkered down in the desert, which is beautiful. It's beautiful to be here. It's what we call boondocking, and it's BLM land, which is Bureau of Land Management. So you can camp 14 days for free.
You put out a very important term, Crystal. What is boondocking? People listening, Write this one down. You need to know what boondocking is.
So boondocking is basically when you are camping, dry camping for free. You're not hooked up to anything. And I don't really ever hook up. I think I have hooked up at a KOA last year. I hooked up with the person I was traveling with for a few days. And then if I go to someone's home, when I go back to Virginia or the, you know, D.C. metro area to visit, I will plug in, you know, to someone's house or something like that. So if you're not plugged in and you're living in a vehicle or an RV and you're completely untethered to anything, you're pretty much boondocking, which is just dry camping, meaning you're not plugged into anything. You can boondock in a Walmart parking lot in some Walmarts. You can boondock at Cracker Barrel, which is where you can park in their RV parking. I've done that before. You can boondock at a quote-unquote rest stop. You know, if you overnight park at a rest stop to sleep there, you know, you're basically boondocking. So, yeah, that's basically what boondocking is.
Okay. Chris, before we – because we got some phone calls for you. How can people, you know, tap into your network? Websites and all that.
So the best way to find out all things Crystal Vanner is just go to my website, crystalvanner.com. I do have a YouTube channel. There are going on 600 videos. I have been videoing for over 3 years now. And there's a binge watch list there where you can watch all the videos from my last day to Sticks and Bricks up till today. And that's the best way to get the overall view of me and my lifestyle, because you see all the ups and downs, the ins and outs, the frustrations, the crying, the all of it. You get the good, the bad, and the ugly of my journey. But crystalvanner.com is the best way to get all things Crystal Vanner.
Okay, great. Now, you're also on Patreon. Can you give us that information?
I am. I'm on patreon.com/hellocrystalvanner, facebook.com/hellocrystalvanner, Instagram.com/HelloCrystalVanner. So, yeah, you can pretty much type in Crystal Vanner and find me everywhere. But, again, all that is on my website as well, too. So if you just want one-stop shop, you can always hook up to all my stuff on my website.
Yeah, because when I was reaching out back to you, because I got this land and about 60 acres of it minimum, if not 70, is out in the desert or deserts and whatnot. So that's why I got back in touch with you. But that are boondocking that, I mean, they might watch the Super Bowl somewhere out there in Arizona or the Chihuahuan Desert. And
right.
They're having the Super Bowl boy out in the desert. So anyway, what I consider the lifestyle that you're living is real living. Better than, because, you know, where you came from, the DMV, I mean, it's the drudgery of getting on. I don't care how much you make, but some people, they can't even afford to get sick that are living on the grid. So what good is it to earn $100,000 or $200,000 a year and you can't even afford to get sick? And then it's put up with the rush hour and the beltway, and you can have all that. Today's podcast is Wealth Perception. Nomad Literacy, 619-768-2945 is the call-in number. Let's go to 407 if you have any questions for Crystal Vanner.
Good morning, Crystal. Good
morning.
Welcome and congratulations on this new chapter of your life. Simplify.
Thank you.
And so healing, in my opinion. I live in a tiny house on wheels, so I had to downsize. I haven't moved my house at all because I'm in a perfect location. But you hit on a very important aspect of getting to this simplified life and downsizing, and that's emotional attachment.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm writing a book about my downsizing journey. And that's the area I'm working on right now is EFT, emotional freedom techniques, because most people who have a lot of stuff and who are hoarding and have too big a house and all that, they are totally emotionally attached to their to their living style.
That is the only reason. Yes, you're very right about that.
So I'm wondering how you manage. First of all, you obviously recognize that, and how you manage to detach from emotionally from your stuff. What some of the things you started noticing, and how you managed to be free.
I'm going to tell you, I think that for me, it definitely started as a child. I grew up with a grandmother who kept everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. My grandmother was big in her church, and anytime someone was going through their things and would ask around the church if anyone knew anyone that needed clothing or dishes or this, she would take it, knowing she was not going to give it to anyone. My grandmother had two storage units when she died, and she had those storage units for like 20-something years and never went back to take anything out. She just added. When I tell you that my aunts and uncles, her 10 children, got together and threw everything in the trash except for photos that were in decent shape, everything went in the trash. My uncle at the time, rest his soul, he's deceased now, was a trash truck driver. He pulled his trash truck up, and they just tossed everything. Nothing was worth keeping. We're talking 50 or 60 wood dressers that probably were antiques that could have been sold, you know, and she lived so poor, you know what I'm saying? At the end, she was in a really nice senior place. My mom and my aunts had gotten her into this really nice senior place, but even that, she had managed to hoard it, you know, full of stuff. That was another place they had to go through and just throw everything away. And
now, do you know your grandmother's lifestyle that may have contributed to that emotional?
Oh, I mean, just, you know, growing up poor, I guess. I don't know. We were never a talking family, so I never got to know my grandmother too well, even though she was in my life. But we never talked about those kinds of things, and I didn't have the verbiage or the knowledge as a kid to ask questions, because we were, you know, you don't ask questions. You get used to out of grown folks' business type thing. You know, I was raised that way. But my mom, who grew up with this woman, proceeded to do the same thing. And even though my mom had a lot of stuff, it was very neat and organized, but it was still way too much stuff. But it's like, just because you keep it neat and clean, if you have too much stuff, you still have too much stuff. So I think from a child, I decided, look, I'm not going to be like these women in my family. I'm not about to burden my children or anybody in my life with stuff. I don't want stuff. Every time we had to move as a kid, for the most part, it would be me, my mom, and my sister. I grew up with a single mom. We had to move ourselves a lot of times. So I would just be disgruntled about the fact that we had to move all this unnecessary crap and pack all this unnecessary crap every time we moved. So when it came to me being a single mom and having to move based on chasing the cheap rent prices, you know, and trying to raise my son, every time we went to move, I had a yard sale, and I sold the bare minimum. I kept my son's bed. I made him go through his toys and kept only what you're playing with currently. I kept my bed. We each had a dresser, and I kept the bare minimal kitchen items. The rest, everything went. I didn't care about having a couch in the living room. I didn't care about having a dining room set, because I knew I could go to a yard sale and find another couch or a dining room set, but that's less stuff I would have to move when I moved. So every time we moved, I'd have a yard sale, and I'd put an ad on Craigslist, and I would sell as much as I could. Then we would move, and then I would slowly decide what I wanted to replace. And there was a time where we had no couch and no dining room for several months. We ate in our bedrooms on our bed, you know. It's just what it was, you know. It was not that big of a deal to me to have stuff. And my mom, I think, hated that. You know, you don't have this. You don't have that. I'm like, I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't find the need for it. I'm fine. I'm good.
Right. You are.
She just thought, I guess she thought my house or my apartments weren't homes because they weren't furnished. You know what I mean?
And full.
But
yeah,
they were. We lived there. It was a home. There was love.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to subscribe to your YouTube channel. You are such a beautiful example of learning the lessons of our parents and grandparents, because they lived that life because they felt they had to. But we are a new generation. We don't have to follow in those same crazy footsteps. But that's a beautiful, beautiful story you just shared with us. Thank you so much for being on.
Oh, no. Thank you for calling in.
I texted my friend in Arizona, told her she needed to be listening to you because you're in her neighbor. What city in Arizona are you in?
I'm actually in Lake Havasu, Arizona. It's pretty small, but I like it here.
Oh, sure. How far are you from the Sierra Vista? Or
ooh, I don't even know. I think I'm a couple hours from Yuma.
Okay. Well,
if she goes to my website, definitely have her email me. All that information is on my website, crystalvanner.com. She can email me, and maybe we can meet up or something while I'm out here this winter.
Now, is it Banner or Vanner, V or B?
Vanner with a V. V is in victory, because I live in a van.
Okay. All right. I had written down Crystalv as in victory, A-N-N-E-R.
Exactly. C R Y S T A L V as in Victor, A N N E R. CrystalVanner.com. Like I'm living in a van. Yep.
Yeah, I'll be going to your website and your YouTube. You know, I do Blog Talk too. I did a show last night on why California is burning, and all those people in Paradise, California, which is no more, they didn't understand the lesson that you teach and I teach about getting rid of your stuff. And there's a lot of spiritual energy behind this fire as well, because Paradise, California was a very racist town for a long period of time, and now they are no more. So we're in a really powerful season of in listening to our inner voice and bringing harmony, being in harmony with nature. And so thank you so much for all that you're doing. Keep up the good work, and I'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Once again, we're listening to Crystal Vanner here on It's My House, and today's podcast is titled Wealth Perceptions and Nomad Literacy. Let me put out another thing, Crystal, that Crystal has been basically putting out there is Enviata too, I guess. The concept of ownership, well, access versus ownership. Crystal has access to a whole lot more of what's available in this life, because she is not into having to own everything. Like, you know, people get a house and then they have to buy furniture, and then, you know, if you don't have every room furnished, you know, then you judge yourself or you allow people to judge you. But access versus ownership, I'd rather have access than ownership, because really, in reality, in this life, that's all we really don't own anything. Outside of our
body. Right, that's a conversation. I just want to cut you real quick. That's a conversation I had with my friend who's camping and traveling with me, and we were saying, you never really own your home, because as soon as you can't pay that mortgage, they're taking that home. And really, you're paying taxes once it's paid off. So technically, if you don't pay those taxes, they're going to take that home too. Or you know, if they decide that they want to develop, they can offer you little or nothing and take that home. So really, it's not yours anyway.
Right.
That's
absolutely
so true.
Right.
And you know, LA House, I have access to two homes that are pretty large, three-bedroom, two. I have access to those homes free. So blessings come when you do what Crystal and I are doing.
Well, that's another wealth perception also, because you're talking about social capital. I can put a cash value to social capital and some other things. Off the top of my head, you might have probably $1 million worth of social capital when it comes to housing. And you've got some social capital when it comes to, or which I call real social security when it comes to people. Now, Crystal, I was lurking on, you did a, at the live stream on Friday night or something like that. And it was like over, I think when I peeped in, it was like 180 people, probably over 180 people. So I'm looking at that as you got a lot of social capital, and all your friends, I'm sure all your friends are not restricted to like one particular geographical area. So when I say social capital, you can put a cash value on that. So you don't need a $300,000 a year job if you can move around and develop relationships.
Right.
And gain more access to more opportunity, more people. Actually, you can live a, this might sound crazy to people, but you can actually live a billionaire's lifestyle. I mean, without, and a lot of people have a warped perception of that. The bottom line with freedom is freedom. It's not things.
Right.
Freedom and experience. So, like I said, go to her. Go ahead, LVR, you were saying.
To barter your services. People need services. They don't always want to pay for it. And if they have what you need, you can barter, and so many people are open to that these days.
But there are different ways to pay, Viola, which I know. Because basically a dollar bill is really a glorified food stamp. So, because it's coming from the government. But, you like you said, you can barter. You know.
Right.
Well, I'm sure, Crystal, in your travels, hopefully you'll run into a good mechanic or two or three or four. And, you know, you trade services and whatnot. And that's how the economy was globally about 200 years ago anyway.
Right, exactly.
But we've allowed bankers to creep into our lives, but then that's a whole other podcast in itself.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go to another caller here, 314 area code. Your mic is open.
How you doing, Ellie?
Good this morning. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I was just listening. It's a good conversation. But, you know, I was going to say this about the taxes. A person, where they bill, those taxes go for things that support that community. And you know, you can move out of an unincorporated area if a person wants to, but people live to provide the convenience that they have. You know, folks don't want to be digging up gardens and so on. Like I mentioned earlier, down in Louisiana, where they have homesteads, the first $85,000 to $100,000 of your property value is non-taxed. And in some cases, a year or so, you may get a check in the mail, sort of like those residual income checks or those checks that people in Alaska receive because of the oil production. But no, very interesting conversation. And I support people who choose to take on that type of lifestyle. It's different. And one of these days, you know, like Mad Max, it may come in handy. But then I just want to put that out there, Ellie.
Thank you, Pianchi. Crystal, on one of your videos, I saw it was about the Vanner Family Camp. Could you break that down for us?
So every year there's a meetup of nomads on wheels, basically. It doesn't matter what kind of wheels you're on. And actually, there are some people that come that are in tents, so it doesn't really matter what kind of nomad you are. But it's run by Bob Wells, who's on YouTube, and he is the owner of CheapRVLiving.com. So he hosts this, what's called the RTR, Rubber Tramp Rendezvous. And a rubber tramp is anyone, basically, who has wheels beneath them, rubber. So I have a small camp there last year within the bigger camp, which had thousands of people. We're talking, I think they said maybe 3,500 to 4,000 people showed up last year for this two-week event, which is the biggest it's been so far, and I think it's going to be even bigger this year. I had a camp within that huge group setting. I had a small camp where anyone who subscribes to my channel and was going to be coming to RTR could come and camp with me, hang out with me, talk with me, have a, you know, live one-on-one, or just meet me. And it became my subscribers are now called Vanner Fanner Family. So once you subscribe and you comment and you're part of the family, I open up as I travel. I do meetups to meet my family. And it's just, it, like you said, it opens up my social wealth because I'm giving access to myself because, I mean, I'm just a person. And if I can help somebody else who wants to live this lifestyle and we can meet in person because I'm going to be in their town, why not? And a lot of times, you know, I get a meal out of it. I get, you know, hey, can I do laundry? You know, so like you said, it's a barter system as well. I'm sharing my knowledge. They're opening their home to me, you know, whatever. So I enjoy meeting them because they're taking the time to watch my videos. They're taking the time to comment. They're taking the time to invest their time into watching me and commenting. And I think that's the least I could do is, you know, give them access to me, access to time to me.
Yeah, people, I highly recommend. Matter of fact, how did I find you? I was looking for somebody to interview in Van Living. And then I can't remember who it was, and they recommended you. Now tracked you down, and then we had that first interview on a Sunday, which because we don't
right.
do it when I was on Sunday, but I did a special one because it took me so long to get to you. And then when I was in D.C., I was recovering from food poisoning. My phone got jacked on the subway and all that, so I tracked you down again. But there's a lot of people that. Matter of fact, have you ever thought about doing, if you haven't done them already, workshops so people can transition from one type of lifestyle to the nomadic lifestyle?
I haven't, but I have been asked to do something similar by subscribers. I've helped a couple of people organize their vehicles and, you know, just be that voice of, do you really need this, you know, kind of thing. Because a lot of times, like we were saying, the emotional attachment to stuff, it's hard for people to downsize their stuff a lot of times. And so, yeah, so I don't know if that's something I'm going to venture out into. I guess it's something I could definitely look into. But as of right now, that's not on my radar. But who's to say that that won't change?
I think it's an untapped market because there's a – well, I'll give you an example. How this podcast came to be, it's my house. I had a house sitter in D.C. All I had to do was pay the utility bill. So, but when it was time – and that worked out well for 2 years when I was in and out of the country. So when I said, you know, when it's time to roll, I wasn't that cold about it. But anyway, that was the thing. You know, you got to go. They
right.
bought it. Now, that's why I brought up the court system, because the reason why they fought it, I mean, after I decompressed, because it took me over a year to decompress. Matter of fact, these podcasts for me are therapy. They're my therapy.
Right.
Talking to people,
right.
You're one of my therapists. I realized this person, because what would make a person try to take somebody's house? And then it all came down to education. Literacy.
Right.
They weren't
right.
taught this. But everything you're talking about, they didn't have it grades 1 through 12.
Right.
People that have MBAs or JDs from Ivy League schools, some of them are living in the Salvation Army shelters or on Skid Row or sleeping on the bench. What's wrong with that picture? Well, they,
right.
through all that, in air quotes, so-called education is really miseducation. That's why I brought you on it, because so I believe, just long story short, what you have to offer is there's a lot of money to be. It's a, you have an industry within you. That's all I'm saying. Let's go to our next call. 267, your mic is open.
Yes, hi, it's Sister Bay. I just wanted to say, yeah, I've already sent you links of Bob Wells. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to watch them yet, but when this podcast is over, if you would send me her link so I can see if I've already checked her out and just don't remember, because I look at a lot of that type of stuff to see what people create in vans and box trucks and RVs and schoolies, and they have some great ideas. That's all I wanted to say, is that I already sent you definitely two. It might be more linked than that. But, yeah, he's an excellent source already that's out there that covers just about anything and everything that you could possibly imagine. So that's right. It. That's
well,
my two cents.
Let me put this out here for people because you really can't. You know, I hate to bring color or race into this podcast. But, now, Crystal, you're African-American. And the reason why I'm bringing
that
up.
I'm black, yes.
It's because a lot of African-American black that because a lot of the lifestyle that you're living, I understand it, and I live it sometimes.
Right.
It's really an answer. I mean, you got a lot of people right now praying to Jesus. You know, don't put me out on the street. Now, you got the answer. So my question to you is how and there are African-American groups. I like you to put that information out there, too. But how do you think people can get to, you know, I'm not going to put this just on the black folks because you got a lot of people in West Virginia struggling. Okay. So what can you tell a person that's struggling on, look, take a look at this potential lifestyle. I guess they can start looking at your videos first. You know, like how to earn money and all this other things that go along with.
Well, I mean, the way I earn money is not going to be good for everyone. Like the caller who was just on the line said, I give props where props are due. And, yes, Bob Wells is a wealth of information because he's been doing this a lot longer. And he's interviewed people of making income in different ways, so that might be somewhere that you want to go for your income-making resources. I did live locally in my vehicle while I worked my regular job. So you can still do this working your regular job that you already have. You just have to be a little more what they call stealth about where you park, and stealth meaning no one knows you're living in your vehicle. So where you're parking, you don't want to be obvious, the vehicle that you're living in. You don't want it to be a huge RV, obviously. You want to live in something more, you know, a little smaller, something that is parked on the street like any other car where there's, you know, free street parking. Check Walmarts in your area and maybe rotate those because a lot of Walmarts will let you park overnight. Check if you have Cracker Barrel in your area because you can park at Cracker Barrels. So if you're going to work your regular job, that's cool. Do that. Save your money. Live in your vehicle. And if you decide, like me, later that that's really not what you want from this lifestyle and you want to actually travel and figure it out along the way, I'm more of a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants, do it on a whim, because in my mind, if this doesn't work, I can always go back. However, I don't want to live with the regret of never having done it. That was my biggest thing I said was, I'm going to do it because I want to do it. And if it doesn't work and I got to go back to the quote-unquote normal lifestyle, then I will. But I want to do this. I don't want to be laying on my deathbed saying, man, I wish I had taken a year or two and traveled in my van like I wanted to. So that's the difference between me and maybe somebody else doing this lifestyle.
Okay. What about, because your son is grown and he has his own family now, but what about people who have that you run into that have families, could you share with us how they're experiencing it and where they're happy?
Yeah, I think everyone's story is different. I've met some schoolie dwellers, that's people living in school buses with you know, anywhere from two kids to five kids, and they homeschool and they make their money on the road. You know, they have some kind of a mobile job they can do, either whether that's in technology or marketing or something they can do with just a Wi-Fi signal and a laptop, and that's how they make their money. There's a beautiful woman that Bob Wells just interviewed who is of Jamaican descent, and she is homeschooling her two beautiful, gorgeous brown daughters while living in a, I believe it's a fifth wheel or a trailer, and it's A, B as in boy, Z as in zoo, Minimalist is her channel on YouTube. So definitely check her out. So if you have kids, young kids, especially school-age kids, there is a way to do this in homeschool. There is a big homeschooling population. You can meet up with different homeschoolers as you travel. There are homeschooling groups on social media and blogs on Facebook that you can join and get those resources and have field trips with them as you travel. So there's something for everyone out here living this lifestyle. It just depends on, one, how much money do you comfortably need to live, and two, how small or how big of a space do you need based on, you know, how many people are with you. Me being by myself, I lived in my minivan, you know, I lived in my SUV, so now I'm in an E150, but who knows if that's going to change. I might have to go smaller if these repairs end up being more than it's worth. So, you know, it just, the lifestyle, there's no one way, there's no right way. Everybody's way is the right way because it's right for you.
And if I may, L.A., the lady she was just talking about, I think that's the link that I sent you. And her daughters are two young girls, right?
Yeah, Jamaican lady. Yeah, I saw it last week. Thank you, Sister Baby. Yeah, I did see that.
Right. But, yeah, basically we've been trained to have a certain mindset in order to keep the status quo. And a person has to get there on their own and see where that's with anything that they want to change, be it a diet, be it any kind of lifestyle change. They have to get there on their own, because most of the people that I talk to, I would say between 50 and 70, they think that a tiny house is bad, which is much more room than living out of a car or a van. So they definitely couldn't begin to entertain
that. Well,
that
depends on the size of the tiny house. I've seen small tiny houses. So that depends on the size.
But I'm just talking about the conversations I've had with people between that age and that quote unquote that's African American, okay? They think a tiny house is too tiny. So if they think a tiny house, even though they range from different sizes, you know that they would say a car or a van, but at the same time, people never know which situation they're going to find themselves in, and they don't have any other choice, because all of a sudden a car looks beautiful versus a cardboard box.
I don't want this to end up being making it seem like this is a negative. I chose this lifestyle. I wasn't homeless. I'm houseless by choice. And I know a lot of people end up in this situation because they are homeless and they had a vehicle, so they just live in it because they had to. And some people end up going back to sticks and bricks. Some people find that they actually do like it and can sustain themselves that way, and so they continue on with it. But I feel like some of these RVs that I've parked next to at different places I've been, they are, we're talking $200,000, $300,000 RVs. And I got the same view as them, but I didn't spend that kind of money.
Right. No,
I mean, some of them are bigger than any apartment I've ever had. So just saying.
Right. No, I'm not trying to make it a negative, but some people may look at it. I was just doing comparison to how the people I've been around and asked the question just about tiny houses, how the comebacks were. That's all I'm saying.
Right. And another good person I would say to, if you're interested more in living tiny, Miss Gypsy Soul, Jewel Pearson, is an awesome example of that. She did not give up luxury in her tiny home. She has a beautiful tiny home. She's been written about. She's been on HGTV. And it's Miss Gypsy Soul, M-S Gypsy Soul. And you can find her on all social media, Instagram and Facebook, and I believe she's on Twitter as well. She's a great place to look and see. A tiny home can be just as luxurious as any other home, because she did not give up that. She has a full walk-in closet, so, you know, in her tiny home. And I've been in her tiny home. Her home is quite, quite beautiful.
I think it's just a perception.
Yeah, it's just people have to get out of their own minds of what the American, quote-unquote, American dream is. That's not necessarily everyone's dream, and that's a falsehood we've been sold through generations, that, you know, in order to be successful, you need this, and this, and that's not necessarily true. As far as I'm concerned, happiness is worth is successful to me. You know, it's worth way more to me.
No, I understand you. I'm on the same page because I watch every tiny house show or every fix-up show that I could possibly watch. So I know exactly where you're coming from. And I thank you for that. I might have already even seen you and didn't realize because I spent hours on the phone watching this type of thing. Because I'm in the process of downsizing myself.
Yeah, what Crystal has done and other people like her, the way I describe it is they cut the fat out of their life. Because a lot of people live in a house where it's just full of fat. In other words, you got rooms full of furniture and nobody lives in there. But the dust mites, that's it. Or people
right.
who have closets full of shoes that they never wear. All of you know,
right.
all that, you know, it's the thing about the United States is we're like, when it comes to consumption, we're like crack addicts when it comes to consumption. We just consume.
Oh, gosh,
we
yes.
eat too much. We take too many pills. We live in spaces that are too big for us. Look, when we came into the, we came out of a womb. A womb is our first womb. And it's only so big. And then when we leave out, we're going to leave out in a box that's only so big, or we get cremated, the container gets even smaller. I mean, like
right.
the Queen of England within Buckingham Palace, which has so many rooms, the Queen basically lives in only three rooms. That's it.
Right.
For the $18 billion in income. Three rooms. The bedroom for office and one of the state rooms for functions.
Right.
That's it. And that's the Queen. You know, let's go to our next caller here. 843 area code. Your mic is open.
Yeah, man, you and the sister just clarified what I was going to say. You know, we're conditioned, we're trained a certain way, which is why we accept and we do some of the things we do. But just like so many people
yeah.
have said, the majority of Americans basically live out of two, three rooms in a house, no matter how big the house is, and they basically only have like four or five particular pieces of clothing that they wear, you know, through the week and the month, and just like the sister said, and then it goes into the change of the season. So if you don't live a place where it doesn't have inclement climate, you basically wear about five or six pieces of clothing. So once you free
right.
yourself, like they say in the Matrix, once you unplug, you really get to see what's really important. And just like a comedian once said, you never see a U-Haul behind a Hertz. So, you know,
right,
all this
right.
frivolous living, you can't take it with you. And
you
I was
can't.
Hoping, L.A.,
you cannot.
That you could possibly give that sister my number. How can we get in contact with you, sis, besides a YouTube or a social network? I don't do Facebook and things like that, but I definitely have some information I'd like to share with you.
My email is hellocrystalvanner@gmail.com.
Okay.
And you can find that on the website, crystalvanner.com as well. All my contact info is there.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate you for what you do and just like what you're saying. How many cities and states you've seen since you started your
I have 14 more to complete the lower 48. So you have to do the math on that one.
And have you been to the mounds and things of that nature? Like, what kind of places have you been going to?
I have not left the country because I don't have a passport. That's my next thing because I have a van-dwelling friend who sold his van and moved to South America. So that's my next thing I want to do. Next year I want to be in South America. So
no.
I want to see him and I want to go to Canada as well. But no, so I haven't done out of the country yet. But that is on the list. It's on the list.
No, I said mounds, M-O-U-N-D-S. It's cultural places. It's historical places where our indigenous ancestors lived. They lived in mounds, you know, like Custer's Last.
No,
mound,
I haven't.
Custer's
no,
Last.
No, no. Okay, yes, no. No, I haven't. Not yet. Definitely send me some info on that because I love visiting places like that. So, yes, definitely email me some info on it.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, there's a lot of art history here. America is the best kept secret. We say L.A.?
I said, when she gets that passport and goes over to Europe, a lot of Europeans, particularly in Central Europe, they do a lot of van camping. Matter of fact,
they do, and I have several subscribers over there, so I can't wait to meet some of them when I get that chance to go over there.
That's how I got to hang out in Italy, van camping.
Cool.
Instead of staying in a hotel, I mean, because the campsites over there are like really swanky for a cheap price, and you're going to love it over there. For a lot of people over there, you're going to run into a whole bunch of people that are on your same page.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, if you look at it here in America, if I may say, look at how many conversion vans.
Yeah, because I imagine when you make it up to Alaska, I haven't been to Alaska yet, but, you know, I'm in the mountains and all that type of stuff. So, scenery. So, in Canada, there's a lot of vast areas. Matter of fact, let me ask you this question, because I'm thinking about when I was in Canada once, crossed the border, and I didn't see anybody, no law enforcement on the highways or nothing like that. So that leads to my question, how do you prepare for possible breakdowns in the middle of nowhere, which that could have happened to you already?
I don't really venture out into the middle of nowhere. And just that's one of the main reasons why. Safety, security, and possible breakdowns, because every vehicle I've ever had has been very old. It's what I can afford. So if you have a newer vehicle, you know, you might not have to deal with that. But I personally don't want to be too far from where I can get food and water as well. I don't have a lot of room, so it's not like I can carry, you know, weeks and weeks worth of food and water. That adds weight and that requires space. So I tend to not go to off remote too well, and I don't have an off-road vehicle, so I definitely don't go off-road. So that's not the particular type of van dwelling that I do. There are people that do it and do it very well, and, you know, kudos to them. I just know that's not the lifestyle for me. That's all. I don't want to be cold either. So any of the places that I go to visit, if it's normally a cold area, I'll go in the summertime, because I just don't, like, I go to Maine in September. I'm going to be having an annual thing there in September. There was a incident, you can see it on my channel, that happened in Maine, and so now I've made it my mission to go there every year and just, you know, hey, I'm here again this year. But I just don't do cold very well. I do have a joint condition, and cold does not fare well with the arthritis and the joint condition that I have, so I tend to steer clear of cold weather, which is why I'm in the desert for winter.
Do you keep turmeric in your vehicle?
Say that again?
Do you keep turmeric, the seasoning turmeric?
I do. I take turmeric every day, and it does help quite a bit. And I do have some different creams and potions and lotions that I can rub into my joints, which two of them contain CBD, which is very, very, very good for that, the pain and inflammation. But, yes, I do. So I just try not to do the cold weather. I just don't want to be cold anymore. And when I left Virginia, I vowed that I would never see a winter again if I could help it. So, yeah, I'm done. I don't want to be cold no more.
Awesome.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, a place that you'll really like over in Europe would be Innsbruck, Austria. You really like that place. Anybody else have any other questions for Crystal? Okay, everybody's silent right now. Okay, well, on that point, Crystal, give out your information again before we sign off.
All right, everything you want to know about me, all my social media platforms, YouTube, everything is on my website, Crystal Vanner, CRYSTAL, V as in Victor, ANNER.com, crystalvanner.com is where you can find about everything.
All right. And this podcast will be available for on demand for 24 hours and about, let's say, 30 minutes after we stop the live stream. And you call, 712-432-8863. That's 712-432-8863. Crystal, we hope we can catch you on not only another day, but put something together where you can actually teach people how to Nomad 101, some type of workshop or whatever, because you supply a lot of information that people need right now. On that note, thank you, everybody, for tuning in, calling in, listening. Thank you, Crystal. On that note, everyone have a good
Christmas. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Crystal.
Morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Crush your morning goals with a steak, egg, and cheese bagel or any breakfast sandwich and snag another one for just a buck with the buy one, get one deal. Only in the McDonald's app. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid once per day. Must opt into rewards.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.